This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We are now, I believe, 10 days removed. I think Sunday is technically 11 days removed from the Phillies getting eliminated in the NLDS. The championship series have been... It's funny, the Yankees-Guardians series was like a really good series, though it only went five, but a lot of the games were really, really close and exciting. The NLCS, though it's going six and does have the potential to go seven, really not a lot of close games. So I'm interested to hear from people if they, like when the Phillies get eliminated, Luke, I assume you've been watching both of these series. Like for some people, when the Phillies get eliminated, like they're out. Like that's, you tune them out. I know a lot of people had a hard time stomaching the World Series last year after the Phillies got eliminated the way that they did. This was not the same thing for me. Like, I watched last year's World Series anyway, but this was not the same level of disgust for me the way they got out, like, they got bounced this year, because I kind of foreshadowed a little bit more, more so coming than losing in seven of the Diamondbacks last year. But there are some people who I just know will tune out the baseball playoffs, who can't stand to watch a team like the Yankees win, can't stand to watch a team, you know, like the Mets or Dodgers win, and that's what the World Series is going to be. More than likely, Dodgers-Yankees, it looks like. However,
I hope
if the Mets can, you know, win two games out at Dodger Stadium, we would have a Subway Series. Wouldn't be the first time that a team who's heavily favored loses game six and seven on their home turf in the NLCS, if it happens. So that series is certainly not over until every last out is recorded and the Dodgers have all four wins. Wanted to play a couple pieces of audio. First of all, Juan Soto is just ridiculous. I don't think there's any chance. I unfortunately don't think there's any chance the Phillies get him. I just don't see how it could be a possibility. Luke, I want to play the clip of his home run. So anyone who missed the game on Saturday night, 10th inning, Yankees and Guardians, game five of the American League Championship Series. They were tied at two. Juan Soto steps to the plate with two runners on base. This call's from John Sterling, our sister station up in New York, WFAN. Here's how it sounded.
The 1-2 swung on, a high fly to center. Back goes Thomas on the track. He's at the wall, and she's gone! A three-run home run. The Yankee bench comes on the field. Wow! What a Soto photo! A long, high, high fly to deep right center and out! He's wonderful. Marvelous. A three-run blast by Soto with two outs here in the 10th. And the Yankees now take a 5-2 lead, and they're three outs away from going to the World Series.
And they did complete those three outs, and, you know, they are headed to the World Series. First of all, I will say, so this is going to be Sterling's last run in the booth here. One way or another, it's going to end for him in the World Series. He obviously stepped down as Yankees broadcaster earlier in the season, seemed like for health reasons, came back for the playoff run, but opening day 2025, the Yankees are going to have a new broadcaster. I used to not be able to stand Sterling, and you know, the ball game over, Yankees win, the Yankees win. I couldn't stand it when the Phillies lost to them in the World Series. But hearing calls like this on his way out, not that he's, you know, I can't really stand the Yankees as a team. I don't really wish for them to do well. But watching, and WFAN, again, up in New York, has done a great job of highlighting some of his biggest calls, and you can see the video of that and the final out recorded here on Saturday night of, like, you know, his Sterling shuffle and how he looks in the booth when he's making these calls. I'll admit it, I am going to miss him a little bit, Luke. Like, there's a little part of me that is going to miss Sterling doing his, you hear him singing mid-call. Like, no one really does. As an appreciation for, like, not because I like the Yankees or I want a New York baseball team to do well, but from a strictly appreciation of broadcasting standpoint,
exactly.
I think I am going to miss him.
No, I agree. And that kind of goes for any long-time broadcaster, really just long-tenured broadcaster.
Yes.
Like, Sterling, you got Merrill Reese, Vin Scully with the Dodgers a couple years back. Like, it doesn't really matter, like, you like him or not, you know about them, and someone of, you know, with his name of, you know, that magnitude and whatnot,
sure.
Like, you're going to miss him to a point. You're going to listen to a Yankees game, you're going to hear a call and be like, oh, yeah, wait, that's not Sterling. That sounds weird. He was pretty good. You know, it's almost going to be like an after effect of, yeah, he was kind of good, but no, I agree.
Now, I will say, don't have any insight on this. There are, according to the New York Post, two finalists to take over his job, and one of them is our good buddy Ricky Ricciardo.
Ooh.
So,
all right.
I don't have any insight on it. I have wished Ricky well. He doesn't seem to have a ton of insight on it either. So we'll see. We will see if Ricky Ricciardo, you know, could be the Yankee guy in 2025. He also, of course, you know, he's still our guy because he's the Spanish broadcaster for the Eagles, but he does Spanish broadcast for the Yankees as well. Could be moving over to the English side with Susan Waldman. He did do some games filling in for Sterling throughout the course of this season. I actually saw him down in the press box when the Yankees were in Philadelphia earlier this season. So it could be. It could be Ricky Ricciardo. But, you know, Sterling, nonetheless, is an all-time legend. Was cool to hear that call. But so the Yankees, they're headed to the World Series. No one's stunned. I don't think, Luke, you were saying this during the break. I don't think the Phillies have any shot at Juan Soto. I think it's... it's a pipe dream at this point. Is there a chance? Jolly said it. You said it too. In my gut, like, I don't think he gets... So Shohei Ohtani got 10 years, $700 million was the contract.
Yes.
He does pitch. I know Soto's a little, you know, is younger. And each contract sets the precedent for the next contract. I don't know. It feels like Soto, for him to get more than Ohtani, as a guy who... doesn't pitch because only Ohtani does what he does. Do you really think there's a chance he gets more than Soto?
It feels
like he deserves somewhere in the 600 range.
I would say he's going to get somewhere in the 600 range. I would say $650 million for him over 10 years, at least 10 years. But the reason that I think he could get more than Ohtani, he's going to be 26 at the start of the season next year. Shohei Ohtani is 30 right now.
He does have the age thing on him.
Yeah, so you give him a 10-year contract. By the time that contract is halfway done, he's still only 31. It's unbelievable. I mean, the fact that he's this young and he's been in the league this long and has been this dominant for this long already, like, he won the World Series with the Nationals in 2019. That's unbelievable. That's five years ago.
He is insane. He came up with the hit of the series, the home run of the series, for the Yankees. Giancarlo Stanton wins the MVP of that series. He popped off all week long. So the Yankees, again, headed to the World Series. They await. If the Dodgers win, game one and two would be out at Dodger Stadium, and the middle three would be at Yankee Stadium. If the Mets win and we do get a Subway Series, games one and two would be in the Bronx, along with games six and seven, and games three, four, and five would be in Flushing and Queens at Citi Field. So still, I hope that Dodgers... Mets series goes seven. Like, it, so far, this series has kind of been disappointing, a lot of blowouts. It would be really, really cool to see, you know, a seventh game of the NLCS and maybe actually get some excitement here just as a pure baseball fan. Now, one thing watching the NLCS, I teased this before the break, that has really irked me, like really, really irked me, has been watching the Mets go up against the Dodgers and watching Mets fans online and the discussion nationally around the Mets be like, wow, our pitching just hasn't been the same thing that it's been against the Phillies. Luke, the discipline that we've seen from the Dodgers hitters versus what we've seen versus the Phillies hitters, I forget who tweeted it out this week, and I wish I had it in front of me, but the Dodgers had something like more than twice the number of walks.
I saw the same tweet. I can't remember what it was, too, but
they
I know
had more
what you
than
mean,
twice
yeah.
the number of walks through four or five games of the NLCS that the Phillies had in the NLDS. Unbelievable discipline. Max Muncy feels like he walks every single time. No one can get him out. And it irks me again to no end because I didn't tell you this before the break. We're going to play the audio. This is Dave Dombrowski at the press conference. It's been played 1,000 times on the station since, but I want to play it one more time just to make my blood boil. Here was Dave Dombrowski being asked about the chase rate of this Phillies team, him relating, and listen to his answer where he relates the chase rate of the Phillies to other teams in the postseason, and you tell me if you think this is a good enough answer when you see what the Dodgers have done this week.
Offensively, were there times where you felt like the group lineup as a whole was too easy to pitch to? Or, I mean, how did you sort of assess sort of the ups and downs that you guys had offensively?
Well, the unfortunate part, you have a tendency to focus only on your own club, right? This is a downtime from an offensive perspective in professional baseball. What was the average? 243 at the end of the year. Most of our hitters were better than 243. You see the scores in the games in most of the postseason. There's not a lot of run production taking place. So at times we are vulnerable to being pitched well, as are other clubs. But I can't say that like going into the last 2 months of the season that we thought, oh, that was going to be a major issue for us. But it's something we'll look at. We'll take a look at trying to address to see if we can make some changes. Sometimes, you know, we talk about, it's interesting, and I know a theme is chase rate, right? I mean, everybody I read in here writes about chase rate. I think it was interesting, we got eliminated. We were sixth in major of the 12 clubs in chase rate in the postseason. And so that's not good, but it's not the worst. We didn't hit.
I mean, who were the teams who were worse? Like the Orioles and the Royals and other teams who got bounced in the wild card series? A ridiculous answer that's been rightfully ridiculed, so I don't need to pile on from that perspective. But when you see what the Dodgers have done this week, like it makes me even more mad. It looks like you found the tweet. I'll get to you in a second here, Luke. Like it makes me even more mad to see how this series has gone. And obviously the Dodgers have been really, really good. They might literally win the World Series. They're 27 outs away from a date with the Yankees in the World Series. It just bothers me that that's how the president of baseball operations answered that question earlier in the week. And then you see that, like, the Mets didn't beat the Phillies. The Phillies beat the Phillies. Like, they were going to lose to whoever they faced because they have, like, their plate discipline sucked. Sorry, go ahead.
So, I was going to say, so two things. Number one, the Max Muncy, you know, 12 consecutive plate appearances.
Playoff record.
Making it to first base or just making it on base. 8 of the 12
were walks. Yeah.
So, he has just been walking constantly. This was back on October 17th. So this was, I think, game four, maybe. So the Dodgers are up to 30 walks in their series against the Mets. This is 3 days ago. The Phillies had 16 total.
All right, so nearly twice, and that was through four games. So they obviously cleared that through game five. Like the point is made. They have much better plate discipline. And I had this take, Luke. I'll run it by you. I think the Phillies, like, I've heard some people say, like, oh, everyone wanted the Mets, or not everyone wanted the Mets. Some people were scared of the Mets. Some people didn't want the Mets. Hey, that's why I didn't want the Mets, or hey, I can't believe you wanted the Mets. Pete Alonso ended the Philly season when he walked off the Brewers, not walked off the Brewers, but did a go-ahead home run in the ninth inning of game three against the Brewers. Luke, I think they were going to lose to whoever they faced. I think they would have lost to the Brewers, too. I think the Phillies playing like that, first of all, your bullpen pitching the way it did, you're not going to beat anybody.
Yeah.
It's been a strength all season long. Craps the bet in the playoffs. That's one thing. But there's no way you can tell me them swinging that many pitches out of the zone, them, the offense is going cold for really lengthy streaks at a time, the bullpen not showing up to that extent. I don't think they would have beat the Mets. I don't think they would have beat the Brewers. I don't think they would have beat pretty much anyone in the postseason in a five-game series.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, I was watching, admittedly, I was watching the Brewers and the Mets series hoping that the Brewers won because I would rather face them than the Mets. But
at the end of the day, I just don't think it mattered.
No, the bullpen was so, so bad, and nobody expected that. The bats were just terrible. I mean, absolutely terrible. I mean, it doesn't matter who's on the mound. They're going to be swinging at the low and inside sliders, the low and outside sliders, just the fastballs at their face. They're going to be swinging at everything. So I agree. It sucks, but it was just they were that bad that it really does feel like no matter what, they were going to lose. Even if they got past the Mets or the Brewers, whoever they played, and they had to play
Dodgers would have dismantled them.
It wouldn't have been close. We might have been close in one game.
This is a team the Phillies were jockeying with one seed position with all season long, and they ultimately got it. And they also handled in the regular season. They won the series 4-2, season series 4-2, and they swept them here. The Dodgers are just on another level. Ohtani's on another level right now. They're doing it every which way. Starting pitching is not necessarily their strength at all. Roberts mix and matches, bullpen arms and short stints on the mound for that team. Their offense has been incredibly disciplined.
Kike Hernandez, who just comes alive every single time he's in the playoffs.
Yes, Kike Hernandez is one hell of a playoff performer. It just feels like the Mets are being exposed. They got through the Phillies in a five-game series doing this. I think they're relatively fortunate to have made it to this point, game six of the NLCS. I think the Dodgers wrap it up tonight. We have Dodgers-Yankees.
I agree. And I've seen a couple of tweets where people are acting like, let's stop acting like the Dodgers are so much better than the Phillies. The Phillies should have been doing this against the Mets. No, the Dodgers are a much, 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 much better team than the Phillies.
And you're seeing it. The Mets...
It's clear.
It's the Dennis Green. The Mets are who we thought they were. And the Phillies beat themselves in the NLDS. Mm-hmm. And the Dodgers are about to beat the Mets because they're just a better, more talented team like the Phillies should have been. And so therefore, they'll get by them. And I think that it irks me more watching this series every single time I see a pitch out of the zone and the Dodgers don't chase it. And I'm like, Phillies would have freaking swung at that. I know they would.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And it's like, this is how the Phillies played in the first half of the season or really played outside of one large slump around July, just after the All-Star break. They played much more disciplined baseball than what we saw in the postseason. We saw a bullpen that was a lot stronger than what we saw in the postseason. It's like, damn, if they were just that team, they would have beat the Mets in four. And they'd be in a really good series with the Dodgers right now. That wasn't fool's gold we saw earlier in the year. They became shells of themselves.
If they were just patient at the plate, you could see when Turner would go up there, when Castellanos would go up there, the one or two at-bats that they had that they, were patient and saw a few pitches, it resulted in maybe not even a hit, but just a better at-bat. They maybe get a single, maybe they get a walk out of it, but you're still working the pitch count, and, you go down with a fight. You don't just go down swinging at a terrible pitch in the other batter's box.
So one of the guys who is the scapegoats of this Phillies team and will continue to be talked about all offseason long is Trey Turner. And, Luke, you were not with me last week, but I said in the second segment of the show that the first thing I would do this offseason, if I was the Phillies, is I would move Trey Turner to second base. You don't even need to wait for the trade window, free agency to open up. You could do that right now. It's not necessarily, a hot take. Some people want to move him to the outfield, wherever, but basically move him off a shortstop. So I said that last week. I've been saying it all offseason. This guy is abysmal at playing the shortstop position. He's about to enter year three of an 11-year contract. Not great. But I got to give a shout-out to our buddy Tim Kelly, who we've had on the show many times before, Luke. He's from onpattison.com, and he was down at the press conference on Tuesday, and he asked the question, one of the questions that we were all talking about from this press conference after the fact. Here was Tim Kelly asking Dave Dombrowski whether Trey Turner will be the shortstop in the year 2025. Listen closely to the follow-up Tim Kelly asked Dave Dombrowski and how he answers this question. Very impressed with Tim. Very unimpressed with the Phillies president of baseball operations, Dave Dombrowski. Take a listen.
Dave, by old and new school metrics, Trey Turner has really struggled defensively since coming here. Will he remain at shortstop moving forward?
Well, when you say that, his metrics are very similar to what they were before he came here in many ways. So Trey has been, he will be our shortstop, yes. He's going to be our shortstop the coming year. But we also feel that sometimes you have to be careful with some of that. And I'm not sure which metrics you're using, but they're not always 100% the defensive. We rely on defensive metrics, but there's also not a perfect way of describing the defensive aspects of the game, as far as we know. He did not have not an outstanding defensive shortstop. He does have good range. He makes really good plays at times. But he also makes too many errors at points. But he has improved. He's worked hard, and I wouldn't be surprised if he continues to improve despite his age.
Well, in terms of errors, defensive runs saved, outs above average, he has gone in the wrong direction the last couple of years. Why do you think that will change as he ages?
Well, he works hard. I mean, first of all, he's the rare player, and one of the reasons when he signed for a long-term contract, he's very athletic. And so his speed is still very good. He's still one of the fastest guys in baseball. So I don't think you can compare his aging process to, let's say, the average player. But he's a guy that's just very athletic. He works hard. He's got a good infield instructor in Bobby Dickerson. We saw some strides ourselves this year on some things that he improved upon. So that's why I think he'll get better.
He works hard? Are we serious? Luke, first of all, the question about, he goes by old and new school metrics. Trey Turner's been declining as a shortstop. And Dabrowski basically goes, I don't know what metrics you're using, but you know, he's been as good or continues to improve in our minds. So, you know, please don't ask that. And Tim immediately with the follow-up was like, actually, I have it right here. Defensive run saved and like, errors, every possible metric for defense. He has got outs above average. He's gotten worse at shortstop. What metrics are you using, Dave? Tell us why you think he'll continue to, this is going to be like an acceptable thing for a team trying to contend for a World Series. And Dombrowski immediately pivots to, he works hard. Guy makes $26 million a year. I freaking hope he works hard.
I would
he
hope sucks. Any MLB player works
he
hard.
He stinks. He sucks at the position. He can't do it. His range sucks. His arm sucks. He can't play the position anymore. It's year three of the contract. I get players have egos, and you don't want to approach a guy because, you know, agents get upset and things like that. Just say that. What kind of facade was that? Good for Tim for addressing Dombrowski down at the good job for Tim Kelly.
Yeah.
Bad job by Dave Dombrowski. What the hell?
It is just such an easy move to put him at second base and put Stott at shortstop.
You could do it now. He could have announced on Tuesday. Trey Turner's your second baseman. Bryson Stott moving back to shortstop like he did in his rookie season, like he did for us in the World Series. Done. And we're going to proceed this offseason with Trey Turner as our second baseman. You know, we feel that he's better equipped to play that position. Done. Over. End of story. Instead, he just lied to everyone and said, well, I don't know what metrics you're using, because he literally has no defense for it.
That's such crazy.
And then when he got followed up on it, goes, well, he works hard. I want Nick Sirianni to go to the podium tomorrow. Hurts turns the ball over three times. He just works really hard, guys. Guys, Jalen Hurts works really hard. Just give him a break. He's going to be okay. He's our quarterback long term. He works hard. He's fine.
Listen, you had it last week with the it's tough to win in this league, so you might be on a heater right now.
I can see
that happening.
I was so mad. I was literally sitting back here during the post-game show. Game ends. I'm like, I said to Mike, I said to, you know, Justin DeRozzi was sitting in there. I tweeted it out. I said it to anyone who would listen. Tom Kelly, if this guy's going to get up there and he's going to say it's hard to win in this league. They just won 20-16 over the Browns. They just barely squeezed one out. Deshaun Watson sucked. It might be the worst quarterback performance they play all year or in our lifetime. And he's going to get up there. I didn't successfully predict that the kids would be up there with him. I should have, in hindsight. I should have parlayed that with it. But I have the timestamp on my Twitter. I'm like, he's going to get up there and say it's hard to win in this league.
I checked your tweet. You said, I think it was like over under 2.5 questions before he's asked about it.
It was the
first. And then you quote tweeted it, and it was within the first 40 seconds he said.
Twice. Two times.
I got to give you more credit.
He said it twice. It's hard to win in this league, guy. You know who doesn't say it's hard to win in this league? Like, teams who contend for Super Bowls don't say it's hard to win in this league. I never heard Bill Belichick, after the Patriots won their 20,000th consecutive AFC East and went to the Super Bowl for the 20th time, say, guys, it's, you know, he used to mumble everything. Guys, it's really hard to win in this league. And yeah, no, business as usual. Teams who win, I didn't even hear Sirianni say it 2 years ago when they went to the Super Bowl.
No.
That is such, if you say, my new take here, Luke, if you're a head coach who says it's hard to win in this league, it means you know your team sucks.
Yeah.
Like, that's code for, we should have won this
game. Yeah.
We got lucky here. I want to try and put a positive spin on this. We might not win a ton of times this year. It's hard to win in this league.
Yep.
Give me a break. Holy hell. Gee, I mean, that was so ridiculous. And then he goes, it's damn hard to win in this league.
Oh,
it's damn hard to beat the Browns. I think they should line up, instead of the Giants, the Mount Union, like, Division III team that he used to coach at should play the Eagles tomorrow. And if the Eagles, when the Eagles only win by one touchdown against the Division III team, he should say, it's hard to win in Division III.
Listen, are we going to start those conversations of, could the Eagles lose to Georgia? Could they lose to Bama? Could they lose to Tennessee?
I'm being facetious. The answer is obviously no.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
but
no,
hey, it's hard to win in this league when you play a college football team.
It is hard to win in this league. I mean, me am I. Like, it's just so, I hadn't seen the yelling thing at that point either. Because, you know, little inside baseball, when the game ends, like, you know, we're running to start the post-game show. Like, we have the game on in TV, but I wasn't locked in to see, will Sirianni yell at someone this week? It's like, hey, post-game show's about to start. I saw that video shortly after I tweeted that. I just knew that win last week had, it's hard to win in this league, written all over it. And holy hell did I net. Like, I'm not even trying to praise myself. It irked me more that I was correct, if you can believe that. It was so ridiculous.
Coming off a bye. Only beating the Browns by four points.
Don't even remind me.
Saying it's hard to win
off
in this league.
Off a bye, home, 1 o'clock against the Cleveland Browns. There should never be a team more prepared in the history of football than the Eagles were for last week, and they nearly gave it away.
There were 9.5-point favorites. They won by four, barely.
Luke, it's hard to win. By the way, does any other sport say that? Like, does Nick Nurse, after the Sixers win, go, guys, it's hard to win in the NBA? Does John Tortorella, after the Flyers win, go, it's hard to win in this league? Rob Thompson wins a game in Milwaukee. It's hard to win in baseball. We know it's hard. But guess what? There's the same number of wins go around every year. So someone's winning the game. Oh, that pissed me off so much, Luke, so much. I'm glad you brought it up. 215-592-9494 is how you join the show. On the other side, something Devontae Smith said this week that's in the same.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.